This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
But that AFC Championship game to win over the Raiders 51-3 and go to the Super Bowl, that seems like something that I'd really like to see Bills fans in Buffalo experience as much as winning the Super Bowl. Everybody there doing that in Buffalo, winning the AFC Championship, which this team hasn't done yet.
This episode of Nuff Said with Bob Kuczynski is sponsored by Chef's Famous Italian Restaurant, home of the Spaghetti Parm and located at 291 Seneca Street in Buffalo. It's time now for Nuff Said with your host, Bob Kuczynski. Bob's guest on this episode is the Associated Press and WIVB digital reporter, Jonah Bronstein.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition, another episode of Nuff Said with yours truly. Honored today to have from WIVB digital site, Jonah Bronstein, who we were just joking. I said once that I grew up reading his stuff in the Niagara Gazette, my hometown. It's amazing to me. You've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, it amazes me when I look at the calendar and do some math and think about different seasons and different eras of Buffalo sports and recognize that I'm now entering a third decade of covering Buffalo sports here and my fourth decade of life and following Buffalo sports. I've been around watching the Bills and the Sabres and the local teams before I was writing about them. But yeah, it's been 20 years. 20-year anniversary just came and went.
You still look like a college guy to me.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you still do. Look like the Channel 7
news director
that I remember.
No, I had dark hair and a dark mustache. Those days are long gone. I grow a mustache, but I don't want to look like Santa Claus, so I stopped doing that. Jonah, the Buffalo Bills, they're 4-0. They're one of only two unbeaten teams in the NFL. And yet there's a sense in Buffalo that they're just not performing up to par. And I'm sure that's because, and I know that's because, against two winless teams in the last two games, they really, you know, they didn't have their foot to the, you know, their foot wasn't on the gas all the way to the pedal to the metal. They struggled at times. And, you know, that game against the New Orleans Saints, who had gotten just pounded the week before, I mean, it was in question, you know, midway through the fourth quarter. So are our concerns justified at this point?
I think that they're valid concerns, but how concerning they should be, I would pour cold water on that. You know, the Bills are, as you mentioned, one of only two undefeated 4-0 teams in the league. The other team is the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. And I saw a thread on Twitter earlier this week about all the issues they're having and some of those issues with personality conflicts and things like that and great players not producing seem worse than what the Bills are going through. I think, you know, the Bills haven't had the most dominant four-game stretch of wins for a 4-0 team. There's some issues maybe with run defense, some injuries that seem to be preventing the Bills from being the best version of themselves in the last two or three wins that they've had. But they've won these games by double digits, and they're, I think, second in the league in scoring differential, second in the league in yardage differential, not just 4-0, but a two-game lead in the division, a two-game lead on the Chiefs in the AFC, a three-game lead on the Ravens, injuries to Lamar Jackson, injury to Joe Burrow. Everything is working out really well for the Bills to have a tremendous regular season, number one seed, home field advantage, all of that. But, yeah, you can see some flaws that might come back to hurt the Bills in a playoff matchup later that are concerning to Bills fans that really pay close attention to every detail of the team.
To me, the issue, and the issue has been since Sean McDermott was here, and it's the style of defense that he plays, but their rushing defense has never been great. In fact, I looked it up. The best they've ever done under McDermott is 10th in the league. And they've had some years where they were 23rd, and right now they're 32nd. I mean, you know, what they've been giving up on the ground is ridiculous. But, of course, you look at their defense right now, and without Milano and Oliver, which I'm assuming, and we're recording this on Wednesday, so we haven't heard of, and I know they're not going to, I don't believe they're going to give a definitive answer probably up until game time, but I'm guessing one, if not both, will return. I mean, Oliver looks pretty good on the sidelines, cheering on the crowd, running around, whether he's got a brace on his ankle, whatever, but they're not at full strength. And, but I mean, like I said at the start of that paragraph, McDermott's style is just don't give up the big play. Don't give up the big passing play. But they're giving up really chunk yardage on the ground right now.
Yeah, it's by design to encourage teams, I think, to run the ball more, to not make big plays in the passing game, to bait quarterbacks into making mistakes and turning the ball over. When the Bills are giving up running plays, they're still trying to punch out the ball and get fumbles. They're okay giving up yards if that somehow leads to putting the ball on the turf and getting the ball back in the offense's hands. You know, they're near the bottom of the league in rush defense, but I think they're leading the league in passing defense, and it is mostly a passing league. There are some really good teams running the ball well, and that's coming back into fashion the last few seasons a little more than maybe it was before. But I think the Bills, by design, are not trying to be the best running defense in the NFL, not playing that third linebacker or heavier fronts as often as some other teams do to stop the run. And there's been some concerning drives where they couldn't get off the field in the last few weeks, but I don't think there hasn't been a point this season or even last season too many times. The Ravens did it, but when a team is running the ball at will on the Bills and the Bills are losing the game because their run defense can't stop anybody. I haven't seen that much lately.
Yeah, I think the Baltimore game was the one where until the last two possessions, and then they did stiffen in the last two possessions. You know, one of the concerns I guess I have, and this is, look, they're 4-0, they're undefeated. We've gotten spoiled by the ability of Josh Allen to not just keep his team in the game, but to make splash plays when he needs to. He did it against New Orleans on 3rd and 5. He just decided to take the ball and, you know, run 30 yards. But when teams are allowed to control the clock by running the ball, it kept New Orleans and Miami in the game because they had the ball. Although oddly, when I looked at time of possession, it was pretty close in both games. It just seemed like you wanted Josh out there more. And I guess that's Josh Allen has spoiled the hell out of us.
Yeah, and the Bills run the ball a bit more than, you know, a passing oriented team or a team with an MVP quarterback might elsewhere. Maybe some fans would like to see the Bills be more hurry up spread offense, quarterback oriented than they have been the last couple of years. But this combination of being run oriented, not asking Josh Allen to do too much, but also accepting that he can go above and beyond doing too much when you need him to, has been a winning formula for the Bills and brought out the best in Josh Allen. He went from a tremendously talented quarterback that played a little reckless, turned the ball over, made mistakes, got in his own way at various times earlier in his career. And that doesn't happen anymore. He threw an interception last week, first interception of the season, but it wasn't a bonehead quarterback move. It was just a regular interception. He stopped making the mistakes that he made earlier in his career, and I think a lot of that has to do with the style of offense the Bills play. And yeah, other teams, like I cover home games for the Associated Press, and my job there is to go into the visiting locker room and help John Warrow with what we're doing there and write a story about the team that loses more often than not. And so I get a good sense of what these other teams think about the Bills and trying to come in here and win. And they all talk about controlling the ball, not turning over the ball, keeping the ball out of Josh Allen's hands. That's what other teams want to do. The Bills are playing a style of defense that invites that a little bit. It could lead to not ugly wins, but it is, I think, contributing to the Bills not winning as pretty as maybe the fans want to see.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to see them be dominant. And at times they have been, but this year, you know, they're still getting double-digit wins. But when the point spread is 16 points, you know, fans see that, gamblers see that. You expect the Bills to live up to some of that, especially when they're playing at home. But as McDermott said after the game, I mean, it's hard to win in this league, and you look across the board at teams that are struggling. The Kansas City Chiefs suddenly have emerged after, you know, they had two tough losses to good teams, but they really looked super against the Ravens, who are beat up, and Lamar Jackson, who was not on his game, but has looked very frustrated to me the last couple of games, especially late in the game. And it may be a result of what happened to them in that first game, because they look like, you know, they were on the road to victory, not beyond victory. I mean, they were so good in that first three quarters of that opener against the Bills. And so what's happened to them? But you look around the NFL, I mean, the Chiefs are still always going to be there. They're the Chiefs. They're like the Bills of the early 90s. I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to show up when it's time to show up. And I'm not putting much stock in that game when they come to Buffalo, because we saw last year, it's where you play January and February that's going to matter. So are the Bills, you said at the beginning, do you think the Bills, is like destiny has put this team on the road between their somewhat easier schedule, especially early? The some of these other teams in the league are floundering at this point. Is this team of destiny for the last year at All-High Stadium or Highmark Stadium?
What does feel destined is home field advantage and getting that AFC Championship game at the stadium. I don't know. I'm not guaranteeing that's what is going to happen, but the way the schedule lays out, the way the other teams are performing, the way the Bills are taking care of business. I went into the season thinking they could lose that Ravens game and still win 14 games. So now they won that Ravens game. I'll be very surprised if the Bills win anything less than 13 games this season. Maybe it'll take 14 to get home field advantage, which they haven't yet done in this era. But it does just feel like, you know, if the NFL was scripted, wouldn't you script it this way? I think I said this tongue-in-cheek last year, but when the Bills lost in the playoffs, I said, it feels like a better story if they lose another time and then come back next year, last year at the stadium, home field advantage, win that game, tear down the goalpost, and then go to the Super Bowl. And I know everybody dreams about winning the Super Bowl in the parade, but I'm old enough to remember, and I'm sure you were there covering it, that 1990, I guess it was 91 by the time, but that AFC Championship game to win over the Raiders 51-3 and go to the Super Bowl, that seems like something that I'd really like to see Bills fans in Buffalo experience as much as winning the Super Bowl. Everybody there doing that in Buffalo, winning the AFC Championship, which this team hasn't done yet, to go to the Super Bowl feels like a crowning achievement. And that does feel like somewhat of a destiny for this team. They still have to take care of business, but everything is working out so far for the Bills to at least get that opportunity to play these playoff games at home.
Well, for those people who believe the NFL is scripted, it's certainly playing into that narration, because it does seem like every marker along the road is the green, every light is green so far for them along the road. Now, having said all that, there's only one thing that can really stop that, and that is if number 17 suddenly is not healthy. And he has been remarkably healthy over his career. He's had some nicks, you know, he had a bad shoulder, he's had a bad elbow. Last year he broke, his left hand, which didn't really stop his throwing motion, but I'm sure wasn't easy to run with. He had to switch hands with the ball. But, I mean, this whole team, there's no two ways around it, and I've said this every week on this. I mean, it all rests on number 17's shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned it's been remarkable, not just that Josh Allen has avoided major injuries, but that he has gotten injured, and he has had taken hits, and there were coming out of games concerns if he'd play the next week or if his throwing hand was compromised, and he's fought through all of that. A couple of years ago, he had an elbow injury that seemed to affect his performance a little bit, but in the last two, three seasons, the little wrist and hand injuries that he's had haven't seemed to affect his performance at all. He hasn't had an injury that slowed him down as a runner or changed his style of play, made him more of a pocket passer or less able to do certain things. And I think, you know, knock on wood for the Bills fans, you don't want to see that happen anytime soon. But in the NFL, players get hurt, quarterbacks get hurt. Josh Allen has this start streak that he's maintained. I don't know what the number is, but, you know, Brett Favre was the anomaly, that he always played through the injuries. He always started. Most quarterbacks, Jim Kelly missed games. He took a lot of hits and things like that. I do think the Bills, with their running game, their offensive line, some of the things they do well on defense, are built to maybe withstand a two-week stretch in the regular season with Mitch Trubisky starting at quarterback. But they're not winning a Super Bowl without Josh Allen, without a healthy Josh Allen playing at his best. But what team in the NFL is really going very far with their backup quarterback? And what of these star teams with star quarterbacks are winning with their backup quarterbacks? I can't even think of the last time that's happened in the NFL. The Eagles a few years back, I think, with you know, Nick Folk. But it doesn't happen very often.
No. And, you know, when I had Jim Kelly on, we did talk about the fact that Frank Reich, who was physically half the quarterback of Jim Kelly, but when he was called upon, especially in the playoffs, I mean, it was remarkable success Reich had. But you rarely have that luxury to have that guy on the bench ready to come in and play. So this team is on schedule for everything we talked about. Sean McDermott, now you've covered the team. Have you seen a change in coaching? Have you seen a change in the head coach, Sean McDermott?
I've seen a change in Sean McDermott in his personality that he presents to the media and the public. He seems more relaxed and comfortable in his skin and his position as the head coach. He seems to be enjoying his position as the head coach and his stature in Buffalo more, and I think is more pleasant to be around for the media. And I would believe that that also is the case behind closed doors elsewhere. But I don't know how much he's changed as a coach. And although there has been some talk from Bills players, you know, he's the dad joke Friday and things like that, that they've noticed a little bit of a change in the last couple of years. But I think X's and O's, football wild, what he believes in, the way he carries himself on the sidelines on game day seems very similar. I think that's one of the strengths of the team, is the consistency that Sean McDermott and his program have brought over the last several years with different coordinators, and especially with this group of coordinators that kind of came up under Sean. I think there's been a lot of consistency, but I have noticed a difference in Sean's persona to the public and the media over the last couple seasons.
To me, last year, the post-game interview on the field after the Ravens playoff win, when he started doing snow angels with Josh Allen live on NBC, to me that was something that I wouldn't have seen from him early on when he came to Buffalo. He really seemed to want to portray, and I get it, it was his first time as a head coach. He wanted to be perceived as, you know, not just tough, but, you know, organized and, you know, and steady, and didn't want to be too flamboyant and give a sense that maybe he wasn't 100% on, you know, on his job as a football coach. And I think now he's realized with his success, there is a side of him that he can slowly leak out there. I watched the, you know, the Wednesday, you know, news conferences, and his joking, his, you know, he's not a jokester, but he will crack a smile and make a couple comments, especially as everybody's setting up their microphones and whatever. So he has loosened up along those lines. And, you know, I only had a chance to interview him once. He first came to town. And, you know, there's new rules, especially at the Bills, where who has access, and you pretty much have to cover the team on a regular basis, which I don't. But I requested an interview with McDermott before he coached one game, because he was an outstanding high school wrestler, and I wanted to interview him about his wrestling career. And I was granted the interview and was brought in, and we sat down and had a great conversation. And, you know, that interview, which was, you know, 8 years ago, hard to believe it was that long ago, but it's gotten, you know, great play on YouTube. And I laugh because, you know, now the commentators will comment about, he's a wrestler, tough Sean McDermott. You look at him on the sidelines, he's one of the smaller guys on the sidelines because he was a high school 170-pound wrestler. He's not like a, you know, WWE wrestler. But he is a he's an interesting guy. He definitely, his life is his job. I'm sure he takes time for his family. But when you look at some of the other head coaches like Marv Levy, for instance, I know one thing. He doesn't have to field some of the questions that Marv used to have to field. The media in the 90s was much different. The Bills didn't penalize reporters for ill treatment as much as they wanted to. So I think, you know, I'll take your word for it, and from what I watch from afar, that he has changed somewhat, and he's relaxed. I think he's relaxed somewhat, and you know, he's more comfortable not just in his skin but with his job. I mean, I've got one of my three sons during a game. Ah, this is why they've got to make a change. You know, why are they running the ball so much? He's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere for the foreseeable future.
Right, and I think earlier in his career, he came in. The Bills had that long playoff drought, and Sean McDermott was a first-time head coach with a lot to prove. And then in that second year, Josh Allen's a rookie. They fall back to a losing record out of the playoffs. Coming out of that, I think for several seasons, Sean McDermott was still had a lot of angst and tension in trying to get this team to win and win more and more each year, and felt the pressure. And then as it built up, the whole organization, I believe, felt some pressure to finish the job and get the job done, beat the Chiefs, go to the Super Bowl. As Brandon Bean says, you know, they've been kicking at the door, but they haven't knocked it down yet. And a lot of, I think, people that follow the team, cover the team, still feel that way in some ways. But it seems to me like the Bills themselves and Sean McDermott, and maybe this is some of the books that he reads or the way he's coaching the team, and you hear Josh Allen talking about this, they don't talk a lot about Super Bowl or bust, or this has to be a championship season for it doesn't matter if nothing else matters if they don't win a championship. They talk about the process and being there in the end and being the best version of themselves. And I think they know that you need some luck and you need some good fortune, that you can't win the Super Bowl in September, and that maybe you can burn yourself out being too stressed about it and too obsessed with winning the Super Bowl when it's only training camp in August or September football games. Now, you don't want to lose focus to the point where you lose games you shouldn't lose earlier in the season, and the Bills have done a successful job avoiding that. But it does seem like there's less pressure to win the Super Bowl. They feel and have internalized less pressure to win the Super Bowl than maybe they were a couple of years ago, and that might be an intentional decision that putting pressure on themselves didn't help the cause in the past.
I think some of that comes from the 13-second game, because they looked primed to host the AFC Championship game at home after that last touchdown with only 13 seconds on the clock. And, you know, would they have beaten Cincinnati and Buffalo? I think they would have had a better than average chance to beat them in Buffalo, even though, you know, Cincinnati beat the Chiefs in Kansas City. And except for the last drive of the game, you know, the Bengals should have been a Super Bowl champion that year. But I think coming off of that, everybody thought they were ready to make the next step, and then they didn't. And so now they realized, and I've heard Deion Dawkins do national interviews about this, exactly what you just said. Just follow the process. This isn't do or die, because where do you go from there? If all the pressure is to win the Super Bowl this year and you don't, how do you start again next year? I mean, that's what was so amazing about the early 90s, you know, Bills teams. For 4 years, they did put that pressure on their shoulders, got back to that game, and then, of course, we all know. And I think that was why those last three Super Bowls were so one-sided, because when things started to go wrong in that ultimate game, the pressure was just too great.
Yeah, and then I think about this more from the fan outside perspective, but it's probably just as valid internally. If you only care about winning that Super Bowl at the end, or maybe just getting to the Super Bowl, the Bills haven't done that in this era yet, but you don't get to appreciate along the way, you know, that each individual wins and being 4-0 and being the number one seed and winning these home playoff games and being one of the greatest teams in the NFL and having an MVP quarterback, maybe a two-time back-to-back MVP quarterback, and everything good about the Bills and being a Bills fan if you're constantly looking ahead to something that hasn't happened yet. And then if that were to happen, if the Bills were to go to the Super Bowl, if the Bills were to win the Super Bowl, I think it would feel better and be more exciting and more fulfilling if that was a little bit of a, you know, pinch me, I'm surprised, I can't believe it happened. But if you spend so much time, and it's not just now, it's March, it's the free agency and the draft and the moves they're making now. The Bills have to do everything to maximize Josh Allen's championship window and beat the Chiefs this year and win that Super Bowl. It just has to happen. And I think if it were to play out that way, it might take a little bit of the enjoyment out of it if it becomes an expectation, or if it's a relief, or it's something that you're so obsessed over day after day after day for an entire year, then when it does happen, you know, it might not be as cool as it would be if you were just thinking, wow, I never thought this could happen, and here it did happen to me.
As a lifelong Red Sox fan, I had that feeling until they finally won a World Series in, what, 2004, and then they won a couple more. And, you know, from that side of it, I feel like, you know, I could die happy, so to speak. Yet, now, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday. You know, they knocked off the dreaded Yankees Tuesday night. We'll see what happens on Wednesday night. But back to the Bills. I've told my sons, they're just a fun team to watch. I'm enjoying just watching them play, and the sense that we may be watching, well, we are watching one of the great players of all time in Josh Allen. And, you know, the series of events that brought him to Buffalo and who he is and how squeaky clean he is. He is, as I've heard some of the national scribes say, he is America's quarterback. He's clean cut. He's a family guy. You know, what other quarterback would bring up their parents' wedding anniversary in a post-game interview like he did? Yeah. You know, and he just, you can't script it any better than what you have. And the fact that he's a physical phenom as well. And I've never seen a player improve as much as he has from when he first took the field in those first 2 years when most of the national guys, you know, always gave him a backhanded compliment. You know, they would mention his physical ability, but then his, you know, incredible behavior as far as turning over the ball. And remember how often he used to fumble when he would run the ball? I mean, his ball safety was just not there. He was loosey-goosey with the ball. And he's really cleaned that up, and not to mention, you know, his incredible accuracy. So we're living in special times, there's no doubt. Now, I don't want to wrap this up without giving you a chance to promote. We're recording this Wednesday. I know you have an event tonight, so people aren't going to be seeing this till Thursday. But talk about your fight for cancer and research, and give us a little insight to what that's all about.
Well, if people can see, I'm wearing this pink shirt. I don't know if they can catch my shoes. They're pink as well, pink wristbands. All month long, I'll be wearing pink as part of the Men Wear Pink campaign for the American Cancer Society. A little over a year and a half ago, my younger sister, Hannah, who was 31 at the time, now she's 33, was diagnosed with breast cancer, triple negative breast cancer, had extensive surgeries and treatment, tremendous outcome. She's doing very well.
Oh, that's great.
At the end of this process, but it's a process that's never ending. There's a lot that goes into that. I got involved with the American Cancer Society last year through this. I had done some stuff with their Coaches Versus Cancer, with the basketball coaches and events that they do, but this felt more personal, and I was able to use my platforms and friends like you in the media to get the word out. So yeah, we're raising money all month long, and tonight we'll have a Wednesday night. I think this comes out Thursday, so we might miss that. But we have some other events coming up. October 15th at New York Beer Project in Orchard Park would, I think, be the next one, where myself and some of the other Men Wear Pink, Turner Battle from University of Buffalo, their basketball general manager, is among those. We'll be guest bartending, pouring beers behind the bar. Portion of the proceeds will go to the campaign. There's other ways you can donate there, or you can, if you see me, you can tap my wrist and make a donation that way. But it's a fun month of planning outfits, wearing pink clothes, and posting things on social media and just trying to raise some awareness and attention for an important cause.
I don't know anybody who hasn't had cancer affect their life. Either in their immediate family or their general family or just close friends. I mean, and just Tuesday, President Trump held an event at the Oval Office to fight child cancer. So it's, you know, I don't know in my lifetime if they'll find a cure, but the treatment has definitely improved since you started in the business and certainly since I started in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And the money that gets raised for research is how they develop these treatments and do new studies and figure out different ways to keep people alive. And cancer isn't a death sentence anymore as much as it used to be.
Right.
Some cancers are worse than others, but getting screened as early as possible, that's very important for breast cancer, mammograms, and different cancers and different screenings. So talking to your doctors, knowing what you're eligible for, advocating for yourself, and finding ways to get screen for as many different cancers as you can is very, very important. Raising awareness, raising funds, more treatment, more research, more screenings will make cancer less deadly, less problematic, even if we never find a cure and completely get rid of cancer.
Right, make it more manageable as a disease. So before we wrap, you write your the digital sports reporter for WIVB, correct?
Yep.
So how often do you have to post stories?
Most often every day that I work. It's somewhat determined by the sporting schedules, yeah. But within my job, I cover the Bills and the Sabres, at least at home, Bisons, Bandits, high schools, and colleges. So there's almost always something to write about.
Right.
Maybe in the summer it's a little bit lighter. That's when I see you out at the Porter Cup and write some of those stories. But yeah, I mean, there's just pretty much always something to write about or something to make a headline about and get going there. Maybe some days, some weeks, I take a little bit of extra time with a story, but there's a lot going on, a lot to juggle, a lot to balance, and a lot to
And you write
about.
For the AP.
I do some work for the AP. Before I started with WIVB, I was a bit of a full-time freelancer, did more coverage for the AP, a lot more Sabres games, and I've been doing this game day helping the AP for about 10 years now with the Bills games, and I continue to do that on Sundays in and around my WIVB job.
And you told me you don't even really have to write anymore. You just use AI, right?
No, yeah, no. I mean, no. But there's ways that we have to start thinking about using AI for headlines or photo captions. Or you know, I haven't gotten into using AI yet, but it's definitely something that I need to be aware of how it might be useful to my job. I need to be aware of ways that AI could replace parts of my job or parts of jobs in the industry that people I know that we do or our station does. And then I teach over at Villa Maria College, and I have to understand how AI could be useful for young journalists and young media professionals, when also guard against, as a teacher, not allowing them to use too much AI to do their classwork. So
you teach writing, right?
It's a sport and media class, and it's within a sport management track, so it's a bit more of a survey overview course of sports media. I do teach a little bit of news writing, sport writing basics, but I've taught other classes that were more journalism writing based than this particular one.
So this is a question I've had since the development of AI. How does a college instructor know whether students are using AI or not? Is it too good? Is that a tip?
That is a tip. I mean, I feel like I can tell. Maybe as a professional writer and as someone who reads other people's writings, editing stories at WIVB or younger reporters, I feel like I could tell. But the thing about AI is the technology progresses and gets better and better. Yeah. It will be harder and harder to tell, and maybe we've crossed that point now. I feel like in the past, what I've seen so far wouldn't have fooled me. And a lot of the students don't use AI, so I can kind of tell when that's the case too. But I had one a couple years ago when I was teaching at Madai. This was an earlier version of AI and bots and things like that, but somebody had used it. They were assigned to go write a story about anything, but it could have been a sports game. And the paper that got turned back into me was one of my own stories, but some sort of computer generator had just changed every word to a synonym or rewrote the sentences. But I was like, well, I was at this game. I know you weren't at this game. And it was just the language was so off that it couldn't have been more obvious. So
one thing, I've dabbled quite a bit with AI. I'm just intrigued by all of the new software. And I've had people, you know, I manage a number of websites and for my business and some Facebook stuff. Some people get totally turned off if an image is created that they, like a logo, a 3D logo has been created in their mind by AI or an AI software, you know, graphic tool, which I have used. And they're like, wow, that's AI. Well, what do you care? I mean, are you a graphic artist? Am I taking your job away? So right. that was kind of my reaction to that. But I have found with AI in the writing, it's not always accurate because it relies on what's already been written out there. It doesn't just generate knowledge. It only can go by what it can find on the internet. And if it happens to sample a site that's not accurate, it uses that information without understanding that it may not. How does it verify whether it's accurate or not? I've seen inaccuracies in things that I've looked for.
Yeah.
But I find it very useful, you can do a whole show on this. I find it very useful if you for factoids, if you need, like I talked about, you know, where the Bills have ranked in, you know, rushing defense. It quickly, very fast, instead of you having to go to different sites and try to find the right site. And anyway.
Yeah, you know, the summaries that like Google does is very good. I haven't found much examples of AI that I would use for my own writing that I think is better than writing it myself. My good friend Tim Graham, who I co-host his podcast with him, has experimented a little bit more, just kind of out of fun, and we talked about it on the podcast, and he's had different things. He hasn't used it for anything that he's ever published or whatnot, but just for, you know, fun on his own time, has played around with, hey, take these notes and turn it into a story. And he's found the AI, ChatGPT, making things up, and then he's had arguments with the ChatGPT about, you know, you're trying to get me fired. So he has found, and I found through him, that it's not, that technology is not caught up yet with what we can do ourselves, and shouldn't be used for that purpose. And it's, I don't think it's journalistic. You're seeing AI more and more in news copy, but it's not original reporting. It's kind of summaries of everything that's already on the internet and streamlining that a little bit.
I found it's much more flowery in its descriptions of things. And I use it one day to on my website, I have a bio, and I sent a chat to me, you know, punch this up. And suddenly I became this legendary figure. And I said, I can't use this, because I would never write that. I would leave it up to people like you to write stuff like that, Jonah. You know, these younger scribes, as they used to call them. Jonah, it's been great having you on. All the success with your Men Wear Pink and for the whole month, and all your, you know, you're everywhere. I mean, I see you everywhere.
I try to get out to as much as I can. High school, college, Bandits, Bisons, Bills and the Sabres, and maybe I'll run into you at the wrestling meets or Niagara University basketball or some of the places we used to rub elbows back in the day.
It's almost like it's not work, right?
Almost. And I do really enjoy it. But the only thing I don't enjoy is with covering all the sports when they're all playing on the same night or within the same week, and you can't really give everything the attention it deserves. You have to pick and choose. If all of these teams could get together and schedule things so there's no conflicts, then I'd love being at a different game and a different sport every single night of the year.
Thanks for being with us this morning at Chef's in the famous French Connection Room, which is my favorite spot in this whole restaurant. Of course, because you're our guest, you get a couple of gift cards to Chef's famous Italian restaurant and some food to go to. You know, I know from my days in the media, I always liked a good meal. You know, give me a good meal and I'm happy. And I want to announce that, so next episode, it's the famous Vic Carucci, who's a longtime NFL insider. He'll be talking football. And Nuff Said with yours truly has done so well. We're creating a second version called More Said, and to handle other topics and talk to some people in the area. I don't want to throw the sports crowd off, and you know, because they'll comment instantly, wait a minute, this isn't sports. What are you doing? So anyway, More Said with yours truly will be coming out in the very near future, so look forward to that. Thanks for being with me, Jonah. Everybody, have yourselves a great night and a much better tomorrow.